Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Good afternoon, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo. And we have a topic today that, sadly, so many people's lives are touched by. We're going to be talking about Alzheimer's, and my guest today, Susan Kohler, has had quite a background with this particular type of a disease that in modern days we have become more aware of. We are learning about so many things today that we didn't have a clue about 20 years ago. And Susan has come out with a tremendous book called How to Communicate with Alzheimer's. And what this is a guidebook. It is a wonderful, wonderful book that enables people to feel like they've got some semblance of understanding about how to cope with this devastating condition that so many people get. And I want to welcome Susan Kohler to my show. Susan, it's a delight having you as a guest.
Well, thank you very much. I'm so happy to be here.
Now, you're a licensed, certified speech-language pathologist, and you've worked at UCLA Medical Center. Now, you have been very much involved with the elderly for quite a few years, over 15, in fact, and because of this involvement, you have found yourself lecturing, you have found yourself developing a training video on communicating with those individuals who are cognitively impaired. You also, interestingly enough, have a background including acting and singing, and you say this has empowered you to become creative with the therapies that you use. Susan, not everyone is comfortable in dealing with the elderly. It all depends on a person's personality, I think. Why is this so comfortable for you? Why has this been something that you found that's called you so strongly?
Well, you know, I think back to even when I was a child, I think I always loved the storyteller in our society. I loved the person who would just sit there and tell me things about themselves and their life. And a lot of times this would become the older person, the grandparents, or someone of just a more mature age who had so much, I thought, to offer more in terms of wisdom and experience. And when I did get my degree in speech pathology, I did find myself kind of going the road less traveled from my peers and wanted to work with the elderly. I also felt that in working with the elderly, we were reaching out to a population that is getting pushed out into the fringes of the fabric of our society, especially the group that has difficulty where a mental condition is impeding their ability to communicate, to initiate engagement and connection with us. So as I started to reach out to these people, and probably my background in acting and the things that I do creatively gave me a little more permission to try things, and as I saw that I would try things, I got responses. People would watch me, and they'd say, you know, you really should write these things down because we need to know what you do. It seems like you get these people to interact with you, and that's how the book actually came to be.
Well, I think it's marvelous. I have a number of families that I've known about through the years, and even just in the last 2 weeks, there are a couple of people that I have talked with. They are dealing with this issue. Yesterday, I had a conversation with someone whose father has a very serious case of Alzheimer's, and he's in his 80s now, and people might be sort of flippant and saying, well, when you're in your 80s, that can happen. No, this is something that eventually we're going to find out what triggers it, because not everybody gets it. But it's been around a long time.
It has. And I think that also because we see people living longer, we're seeing the signs and symptoms manifest now much more, you know, we're much more aware of these changes that go on that make it difficult for a person to function as an independent human being. We look at that now in a much different way. But you're right, this has been around. And you know what else, Donna, we also know that there are people who, even upon an autopsy, will show that they had some issues that look like the plaques that develop in Alzheimer's mm-hmm. that did not manifest any symptoms of Alzheimer's. And we're finding, as we look back at their history, they were people that kept themselves very mentally and physically
nutrition?
Active.
Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. We had to take a break because of some technical difficulties. Now we've got that all ironed out. Susan, I wanted to let my audience know, because we were talking before we had the temporary interruption, about how this is not something that's brand new. This is something that's been around for quite a while. And your statement about the autopsies that have been done on people where they have actually found plaque in the brain, but because the people have kept themselves so active, they never developed the Alzheimer's. Now, Alzheimer's was named, the actual disease, as it has become known as, was named after a woman, Alois Alzheimer, and she died in 1950. A German neurologist described it in 1907, so that's when the actual term was given to it. Previously, I think it was typically labeled as dementia. And one of the things that has been brought to my attention, it has been brought to my attention by people in the medical profession, that they say that nutrition is having a great deal of an effect on the brain. And so here we are in this time frame where we're becoming more knowledgeable, but what are the numbers? I mean, the population today, the likelihood of someone living to be well over 100 years of age is quite high. I mean, this, you know, it's growing. What are their predictions regarding the amount of people potentially coming down with Alzheimer's?
Well, you know, the latest statistics, and of course these will change all the time, we're finding that now Alzheimer's is a form of dementia, and the statistics on Alzheimer's alone is about 5.2 million Americans, that's just in America, have Alzheimer's disease. And, you know, and that doesn't include the other forms of dementia. And, of course, on a global scale, that would be much more. The other thing that's interesting to me, Donna, is that that 5.2 million, for every one person that has this dementia, it affects about 10 other people. Because it affects loved ones and professionals and families and friends and people that come in contact with this person. So think how much more that number gets multiplied. And then we're looking at a population with baby boomers that this number will triple very, very quickly. They say, you know, at least by 2030, we're going to see this number just, you know, enormous with the population that gets to be older.
Yes. Now, one of the things that I am very much aware of, too, because of the nutritional factor, the physical factor, the emotional factor, there are so many things that go on. There is an aspect of genetics that plays in this. And I was talking with a young woman just within the past 2 weeks. She's in her 30s. And Alzheimer's, as they are perceiving it, as Alzheimer's has affected the woman and her mother's side of the family for generations, and she's terrified. Here she is, 30 years old. She said, I am just terrified that this is going to happen to me. So there is, again, this patterning. And I think that the more we can be informed, especially with the older individual, the better it's going to help us. And that's what your book is all about. Now let's go into the question you have in your book is, what is so important about communication? Well, my goodness, communication is what enables us to get what we want. But when you have someone who is in that phase, where the brain just isn't working. It just is not working. I've known people to yell and scream, and then this person is just sitting there just looking at them, and it's just really sad. So let's talk about what can be done.
Yes, I mean, I think it's very, very important to identify why it is so important that we look at an individual who has, say, Alzheimer's or any of the related dementias and understand that the communication is the foundation for what we want to do when we approach them, if we want to connect with them, if we need to take care of them. Communication is first and foremost. It is, that's what we're all about. That's why we're here. So if we don't have someone who can connect with someone else, if they are, in a sense, becoming isolated, we're going to start to see depression, declining function, you know, a greater dependency created for that person with loss of ability and loss of quality of life. So what I like to talk about is how we become the facilitators. We are the people to reach out to these people and become the person that can help initiate a connection. And once there's a connection, then you have cooperation with care. You have someone who can interact with you, whether they're limited in verbal skills or not. You have someone that you can get dressed and get to the doctors. There's someone you can sit and look at a photograph book with. And there's some very meaningful exchanges that can happen if you look at how to get that connection made, and you've got to use good communication techniques. And that's the thing I like to teach, and that's what I like to show in my book. I've simply laid it out to help people understand this process and made it as basic and simple as possible.
You have some wonderful photos of elderly people in the book. One of the things that you emphasize, and I've talked with people who have been caretakers, family individuals that have done it, also professionals, and it's very hard for them, and I have a great deal of appreciation for their effort, but when they have their own family or they've got things going on and then they're dealing with someone who is very much like a child and sometimes can be very obstinate, you want to get some kind of communication out of them, and their brain is just not operating the way it would have normally. You talk about having routines and how important those routines are. And let's go into that a little bit.
Yeah, routine is I think what it brings to anyone is security. You know, I was just at one of the facilities I work at today, and one of the physicians came up to me, and she hadn't seen me in a day or two because I had been somewhere and not at that facility. She says, I don't like change. Where were you? You know, and I thought, we're all like this. We all like routine. We all like to know who this person is, and we're comfortable with them. And so if you can establish some kind of daily ritual, whether it's in personal care or in grooming or eating meals or certain activities, or what you do throughout the day, the more you can keep it consistent, the easier it will be for that person to respond within that environment.
You also talk about how in working with the brain, in working with that individual, that even when they reach that point of severe Alzheimer's, there's still skills and abilities that remain. And recognizing those can be quite a challenge because we all have our filters that we look through and our expectations. And I think, especially with people that are family members, it's really hard sometimes if you've had, let's say, a dad who is so bright and so absolutely wonderful, and here you have someone that just looks at you as if you're an alien from Mars and has about a 5-second attention span. What would you say to those people? How can they not get so emotionally stressed, because it is very stressful for them?
You know, you're right. It is very difficult, and you put that so nicely, that we really have to appreciate what our caregivers go through, and especially when it is a family member, because we have expectations of that person that we've had our entire lifetime with them, and it's changing. And I think we really need to understand and forgive ourselves that we're going to have these feelings come up, and yet we need to still look at that person as to what can we do, what things can we use as their strengths. One of the strengths, Donna, that remains for quite a while in any of the disease processes that go on with cognitive issues is recognition itself. If you start to look at a little more of the nonverbal behavior that you see from someone you are caring for, or someone that you love, you'll see all of my caregivers say, I see it in their eyes. I see it in their eyes that they did recognize that. They didn't have the word for it. They may have called me someone by the wrong name or may have looked at me as if they couldn't say anything, but then there's something in their eyes that tells me they've recognized something familiar and comfortable. And I think we have to start looking for that, number one. The other thing we want to do is always look at how we engage someone's attention who has cognitive difficulties, like someone who has Alzheimer's. You have to be able to give that person time to warm up to you, to the situation, so that they can begin to respond and have that comfortability that they find in recognition. And it won't happen as quickly as, say, you and I, if we were sitting together talking. We would look at each other and start right away. Mm-hmm. But not for a person with Alzheimer's. Their processing is slower. They're typically older, so they have less ability to hear and see well. And there may be distractions around the room, which we'll try to eliminate. There's time that needs to happen to get somebody to come and connect with you. And once you give it that opportunity, connections are beautiful. You'll know it. You'll know you've got someone who's with you and you can have an interaction.
Now, one of the things that you said, just a number of the points that you've mentioned, eye contact, standing in front of the person when you're talking to them, which I think is very important, because just like when you have a child, many times they're busy, and so you have to step in front of them, or you have to literally get their attention. And it's fascinating
isn't that true? We have to look at a person now who needs time with us in order to attend, to simply selectively attend with us. And just as you would with someone who's younger, who's now developing their attention skills, a person who's older, you're going to try to re-stimulate that ability to attend and engage. And you really do have to look at, am I seen? Am I approaching slowly? Am I approaching calmly? If I sit down right at their level, you'll see a difference than if you're standing next to them, they're sitting, if they're in a wheelchair, for example. So it's really important to watch all those, you know, issues about how you're going to come forward and make eye contact and get someone's attention. It's very important.
Now, you say, and this I found a very good statement, but I don't know that it's easy for people to comprehend. Do not talk to the person like you might a child. Be positive, reassuring, and do not talk about them as if they were not present. And I think
yes,
that is so absolutely important, because if you treat them that way, there is going to be that isolationist positioning they'll go into, unless they with it, that they don't recognize anybody or anything. And I've known some families that have dealt with that. But I think really it's still the issue. They feel what you're feeling.
You know, it's really true. And they pick up on what, on your energy. They pick up on what you're saying and how you're saying it. So make a connection with them. And I use the word connection. When you make that connection, you know, you want to make it as positive as possible. There are times when it is going to be difficult. There are times when you don't think that perhaps there's something there that they're able to recognize and look back at you with some kind of comfort in their eyes and their expression. But if you try to look at these communication techniques as far as what we're you know, talking about here, like especially getting someone's attention, watching those behaviors that are going to help you make a connection, you're going to find that you'll start to read them, and you'll start to know, even when they are not able to express quite so much through their face, that you are going to pick up on a lot of things that they can they definitely have some sense of you there. And that's what's very, very important to understand.
Well, you also say this is a time, too, when we're dealing with this, to be a good listener. And there are behaviors that come about. I think of a very good friend of mine, her father, when it started happening with him, when he was in a fairly advanced stage, he was very, very violent. And for him to get his medication, it would take 6 men to hold this man down. So, you know, you have sometimes things like this. I've known of families that have had to deal with loved ones that will break down doors. You know, not so much the women patients, but the male patients, because they physically have the strength. And they will break the door, or they'll undo the hinges, and off they go. And it just causes such tremendous, you know, just absolutely tremendous anxiety, and especially if the family is caretaking for them. And how can we deal with these difficult behaviors? Because sometimes I think somewhere within their minds, they're angry. And they're saying, I don't like this. I don't like who I am. I don't like what this is. And I've got to get out of here. You know, it's just.
And I so agree with you. And I think also when there is such a the breakdown in communication that occurs throughout the process of the disease, that we have a person that can't tell us this, the way you just put it, is probably what they are feeling, but they're not able to express that to us and sit down calmly and just say, this is where I'm coming from. So, you know, you mentioned in the beginning of our discussion the idea of how the caregiver has to cope. Behavioral issues are very, very difficult. What I talk about in my book is looking at the different problems and then trying to, you know, one, you need to diffuse situations as quickly as you can, and I give suggestions for that in terms of how you would approach someone, the way you would use the calmness in your voice, which they tend to match. You have to look at what escalated the behaviors in the first place, and when behaviors like this become so frequent and you don't quite seem to be able to grasp a way to make the environment comfortable or your approaches are not working, you need to look at also some more professional help, which is always available. It's sometimes we think it might be hard to find, but once we get out there and we look, there are care management services and senior, you know, there's a Department of Aging in every state that can help you with certain caregiver groups, and you always need to follow up with a physician, because in some cases, whereas it sounds like you and I would be more of a behavioral approach, sometimes there is medication that helps in certain situations, and a physician needs to be involved in that case.
Mm-hmm.
So while we look at behaviors, we need to see where communication has broken down, because typically that's what brings out the behaviors we don't want. And that's why I think we need to really look at how we are communicating and what we are communicating and ways that will help make that person connect to us. Then we have cooperation and safety when we are giving care.
Now let's talk about the caregivers for a moment, because your book, How to Communicate with Alzheimer's, I think is such a wonderful tool. One of the most important things, and I can recall talking with, believe it or not, it was a medical professional whose mother was in a state of dementia, and the only one really that could communicate with her well was the eldest son, her grandson in the family. Somehow or another, that connection always maintained itself, and so when it came to getting medicine or anything like that, then he could, and he was just in his early teens, but he could do this with his grandmother, and they were able to get things done. But when he wasn't around, then they really had a difficult time. And I can remember telling her, ask for help. And she was a medical professional. She didn't even give it 5 seconds of thought as a professional. And she said, that didn't even cross my mind. You know, here she is. She figured she was going to take care of it all herself. Well, it was just tearing the family apart. And once they did get some help, and they had a daycare center that came into it, there were different things that were done, and she said, I cannot believe the difference that that has made. They felt like they had some breathing space. So let's talk about caretakers and facilitators.
Yes, I know. That is a great, great story. And when we realize that there are resources out there, we do think, everyone thinks that. They go, I never thought and I never knew there was so much. And more all the time, there are people and services and organizations. Of course, the Alzheimer's Association, for one, there's local chapters everywhere, and they are always available. You know, even if you think you have a question that doesn't seem like it's that important, they will always find someone to help you. But as far as us being a caretaker, and it's part of, you know, our job to take care of someone, we really have to look at how we are a facilitator, and we advocate for that person, because that person may not be able to speak up appropriately or, you know, very well for what they need. So we have to be the one who's got to take the lead on this. We have to be the one who is going to help them be able to do the things that they enjoy doing, to be able to stay interactive with other people and not get isolated. So there's a lot. Our job is very, very, you know, busy and full, and we have to kind of look at ourselves and our schedules. Where do we need a break from this person? Is there a daycare center? Are there activities? There's even groups that now have what they call companions who come by and help you with, you know, taking an activity with that person while you get a break.
Mm-hmm.
There are really a lot of things out there, which is very encouraging to know.
I think that is important. And one of the things that I have found in dealing with people through counseling is they need to not be in the position of carrying guilt. There is often so, I mean, one of my most vivid experiences with this goes back, my goodness, I think I was 17 years old, and I remember a family whose mother developed a brain disease, and it just turned their whole life around, and she got so upset with her mother. She was one of three caretakers in the family, and they didn't have any outside help. They said, no, we're going to do it ourselves. And one day she got so frustrated, she ended up slapping her mother. Well, the guilt that she had from that, because her mother became very, very belligerent, and her brain wasn't working right. Now, logically, she knew all of this, but emotionally, she just was so exhausted, so frustrated, she was just at her rope's end, you might say. And she did this. And as soon as she did it, she just almost fell apart. And her mother died, I think, a year later. And after that, then she had a nervous breakdown because she never forgave herself for that action. And
you know, I hear that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, it's really interesting.
You know, you're so right. It's the guilt that caregivers, you know, the burden that they carry, and the times where they get so just fatigued, and then their responses, their ability to pay attention to what is needed for that person that they're taking care of, is further exhausting them. And I think it's so important that you bring up the guilt, and how much, you know, there are times when things won't go well. There are times when we'll have some just sheer joy of the connection that we get with our loved ones. And we have to remember, you know, that that is part of it all. It's part of caregiving. It's so important, therefore, to take care of yourself. And I do try to remind people all the time to stay connected to their own friends and families and look for support groups. I don't know if you've had this experience, Donna, but I've always heard when people finally find a good support group, that has really helped them, you know, tremendously.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, again, that if you realize that you can't do it all yourself, and that if they are progressing, there are going to be these phases, and asking for help is not a sign of weakness. Asking for help is not a sign that you don't care. Asking for help does not mean you're stupid, you're ignorant. It means you need help, for heaven's sakes, and that's okay. I know we're just about out of time, Susan. How to communicate with Alzheimer's. Susan Kohler is my guest. This is really a wonderful guidebook to help you become empowered so you can, if you have someone in your family that's going through memory loss or has moments of confusion, if they are diagnosed with Alzheimer's, there's all of these things that can occur.
this will give you something that empowers you so that you realize, one, you're not alone, two, that you can deal with this, and three, where you can go to get some help if you need it. She's got a wonderful reference directory in the back. Susan, your website is G like George, R like Robert, publishing.com. That's grpublishing.com. You can go there. You can find out more information. Susan, I want to thank you for being my guest today.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate this very much.
This is Donna Seabaugh. Again, if you have a loved one, if you know of anyone, if you have a friend that's going through this, do them a favor. Give them a gift of this book, How to Communicate with Alzheimer's. Susan Kohler, K-O-H-L-E-R is her name. Website again is grpublishing.com. Go ahead and find out more information. You'll be doing your friend, yourself, a favor if you want some additional insights into this devastating condition that's affecting so many millions of people. Donna Seabaugh here. We're taking a break, and we're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Seabaugh to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Seabaugh. That's right, Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Seabaugh's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Seabaugh's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Seabaugh and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Seabaugh, and telephone lines are now open, so you're welcome to give me a call if you so desire. The toll-free telephone number to call in to is 888-815-9756. Now remember, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. So 888-815-9756 for the next half hour. You're welcome to give me a call. I wanted to let you know who's going to be coming on next week. On Monday, we're going to be talking with some interesting people. In the first part of the show, we're going to be talking about how you can keep your pets safe during the holidays. And Christina Hansen has some wonderful information to share with us. And then after her, we're going to be talking with Medora, a wonderful woman, about this wonderful book that she's got out called A Christmas List Organizer. It is super. You can keep all of your information in this book. It's handy, very easy to work with. I think you will really enjoy it. And then on Tuesday, we're going to be talking with Andrew Harvey about his wonderful publication, The Hope, A Sacred Guide to Activism. And then, werewolves. Yes, Robert Curran. He's in the UK. We'll be talking with him. Robert's been a guest on my show before. This man is a historian, and we are going to have some real interesting facts to share with you about that typical type of creature that, well, most of us wouldn't want to have breakfast with him, but regardless, we're going to be talking about the werewolves and where they came from. How did they originate? And then Denny Stockdale is a wonderful man. Conversations from the Neighborhood Ice Cream Shop. This is a down-home, down-to-earth kind of a sharing that I know that will just mean so much to you. And then if you love dogs, you're going to want to know about Maggie. Dawn Cairns is going to be my guest, and we're going to be talking about her fabulous dog, Maggie. So we've got a great lineup of guests, and I hope that you'll tell your friends. And just know you can always pick up the shows in the archive section of bbsradio.com. And if you want to know more about the guests coming up, just go in and check the list that we put up every month for the guests that are upcoming, and you'll find out about some of the other shows that are coming up as well. It's hard to believe we're inching little by little closer and closer to the holidays. I can't believe all the Christmas ads that I'm hearing. And we just got past Halloween, it seems like. But that's just the nature of the world as we have it. But we still have to deal with practical issues in everyday life. And have you ever had something that you've leased and found out later, like maybe a cell phone or whatever, that your contract was a lot longer than what you wanted? Well, I came across some concepts and some information regarding how to deal, and there's three different things that you can do if you want to be able to save some money. And if you've, let's say, gotten an extended warranty or various things, let me just share these with you. If you have an extended warranty and you feel, I really don't want to pay this, you can get out of this if you want. And what you want to do is bypass the salesperson who sold it to you, call the customer service of the warranty provider. Now, this usually is a different company from the store where you have purchased this extended warranty. And clerks will often get commissions from warranties, and they're less inclined to encourage you to give it up. However, frequently a representative from the warranty company will be willing to help you on some level or another. So if that is something you're contending with, or if you are inclined to buy extended warranties, it may be something you want to keep in mind if you would choose no longer to pay on it. Also, if you have a long-term contract, do a takeover. And this is something that happened to me. I had a lease, and this was something that I found I wasn't wanting it for the period of time, so I had to look at something else. What else can be done? Well, let's say you signed up for a two-year contract, a health club or one thing like this. But if you go to cancel, then you might be hit with penalties because you have signed this contract that you were going to pay for it during for a certain amount of time. Now, what happens is that in most contracts, you can transfer your liability for free if you say find someone to take over the remaining months. You don't have to pay another penny. Now, a good way to take care of this is to post an ad for free on sites like Craigslist. And if you want to have someone take over the contract, point out the positives, like there's a shorter term contract and there won't be any upfront fees. This could be anything from a merchant terminal that you might have. Maybe you've gone out of business and someone said, gee whiz, you've got to continue this for the next 4 years. This is what you've got, blah, blah, blah. If you can find someone to take it over, this is the way to do it. Also, if you want to stop a subscription service, all you need to do is call up their customer service center and cancel your subscription charges. As you know, let's say maybe you've got an internet connection and you don't want to continue it. Now, you might find that there's a little bit of a hassle with this. Put your request in writing and send it via mail, fax, or email to the contact information on your bill. And you want to include your account number and ask for a confirmation. That way, you may end up saving yourself a lot of hours of frustration. And you want to be sure that you have a good paper trail to make sure that your request is honored. And I will tell you, I've known of people that have gone in, let's say, for loans or you're going through processing. And in today's world with computers, you think everything is just going to be instantaneous and very quick. And guess what? You find out it's not. We had a situation not too long ago where information was supposed to have been sent to us, and the individual that got in touch with us said, we haven't gotten such and such. And we said, well, we never got the email. What are you talking about? Somehow or another, their email was floating out in cyberspace. They might have had the email address wrong. It was never received. So remember, keep a good record on whoever you talk with and when you talk with them, time of day, the date, and again, their name. And that way you have something to refer to. It's so easy to forget to do that. But when you do that, then you're going to be way ahead. This is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are open, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Now, for those of you in Western Washington that might be listening this afternoon, I want you to know I'm going to be doing a special appearance at the King's Bookstore in downtown Tacoma at the Dickens Festival. That's coming up on November 21st, just a couple of weeks away. Hard to believe, but it's moving along pretty fast. So it's the 21st, and I'll be there from 11 until 4. And by golly, that's next Saturday. What am I saying? A couple of weeks. It's only a week, a little bit over a week away. My goodness, time just flies fast. But anyhow, just know that I'm going to be there, and part of the proceeds for doing the mini consultations will be going towards a charity that's being sponsored by the Dickens Festival. If you would like to have more information, go to dickensfestival.net and you'll get all the details regarding this wonderful family event. This is their fifth annual presentation and it just keeps getting better and better. So I hope to see you there. Okay, again, telephone line is open if you want to give me a buzz, 888-815-9756. You know, we were talking about Alzheimer's, and there is a lovely young woman, Amanda. She's from Tennessee, and she said she's a teacher, and she became aware of a lot of programs on National Public Radio. There was one in particular that she really liked, which was called StoryCorps, and she said what people had done was get taped interviews of members of family that had unique experiences, or they just wanted to make sure that they got their stories. And she said, wow, how often do we take time to listen to people's stories, their hopes and their dreams? And she said, I figured I was going to go visit my 89-year-old grandmother. And her grandmother's name is Opal, but she used to call her Mama. And she said, this is what we did. We just went to her apartment, and she said, I want to ask you some questions. Would that be all right? She said, sure, go right ahead. And she said, I would ask questions like, what was the happiest moment of your life? What are you most proud of? What important lessons have you learned? What's your earliest memory? But she said, when I was asking these questions, I started to realize I wasn't getting really good answers. But more than that, her grandmother started telling her stories. And she said, I learned I just had to shut up and let her tell the stories because her stories were wonderful. And so she listened for the longest time. She had stories about this young lady's dad. She talked about what it was like going through the Depression. She talked about so many things that her granddaughter, Amanda, just didn't have any way of relating to, but she was just amazed. And she said, these were all very personal moments. These were experiences that had helped to form my grandmother as a person. And so she said, as I was listening to this, I was just in awe of everything that I was experiencing. She said, I realized that her life was about these stories, the way she had lived her life. She said, I learned more about my grandmother in a few hours than in my entire life. She said, it's amazing what you can learn when you just listen. So she said, November 27th is the National Day of Listening, and why not participate? I think it's a wonderful idea. I have a very dear friend. She did that with her grandmother, who lived to be almost 100. And she said she's so glad she did it because she gave it as a gift to many of her family members. And now that she has grandchildren, she's going to be able to tell them about their great-great-grandmother, and they're actually going to see her because she was able to do a video of her grandmother. And it is just a legacy that will, well, pass itself on in a wonderful way. Donna Sebo here. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I've got some more good things to share with you. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, however, 888-815-9756. We're coming right back.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Well, how often do we, when we're planning for entertainment, think of having something so unique as a fire eater? Well, I came across this story, and I thought, I really got to share it with you because it just gives you a whole different view on what to consider for entertainment at a big party that you may want to plan. Now, we're going to be stepping back in time. We're going to be going back to the 1600s. Yes, in fact, it's October the 8th of 1672, so let your imaginations just have free rein here. There was a man by the name of John Evelyn. He was famous for his diaries recording the culture and politics of the 1600s. He told about witnessing a phenomenally spectacular performance by a man called Richardson. He was well known for his phenomenal fire-eating acts. Now, he was first noticed by wealthy society in 1667 in France. He went on to become famous throughout Europe. He entertained thousands of people, privately as well as publicly, with his awesome shows. Now, on the evening of October the 8th, 1672, he had dined with a lady of high positioning, Lady Sunderland, in fact, at Leicester House, and he was entertaining the guests. Now, this is her note that she wrote about this. Her name was Evelyn, that was her first name. He devoured brimstone on glowing coals before us, chewing and swallowing them. He melted a beer glass and ate it quite comfortably, then took a live coal on his tongue, and he put upon the coal a raw oyster. The coal was blown on with bellows until it flamed and sparkled in his mouth, and so remained until the oyster gapped and was quite boiled. Then he melted pitch and wax with sulfur, which he drank down as it flamed. I saw it flaming in his mouth a good while. Then he stood on a small pot, and bending his body, took a glowing iron with his mouth from between his feet with divers others prodigious feats. Whew, I bet you they didn't have fire insurance. It would have cost him a fortune. Well, he is not the only person that did something that was quite extreme of that nature. During the mid-1700s, there was another fire eater. His name was Robert Powell. That such is his passion for fire that if he were to come hungry into your kitchen while a sirloin was roasting, he'd eat up the fire and leave the beef. Do you want him as a guest? I don't think so. He's not around anyway, so it doesn't make any difference. And in the late 1700s, a Frenchman named Dufour introduced comedy and music into his fire-eating act, which also included him devouring live insects and large animals. A trumpeter and a tambourine player made music. They got all kinds of public attention, and it was the highlight of the meal. He would regularly, during his performances, consume a soup made of hot coals and stones in a broth of boiling tar, and occasionally ate a whole calf. And for dessert, he swallowed knives, forks, glasses, and dishes. Well, I guess that would take care of cleanup, wouldn't it? Oh, I know I'm being sassy. Can you imagine? But there are those individuals that have, for whatever reason, those unique capabilities. I wonder if they ever had to have a doctor appointment. Really brings up a lot of questions, doesn't it? But people like that do and have existed. I thought I would share that little bit of a story with you. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Now, if you have a pad of paper handy, I have a chocolate recipe for you. Oh, we can't live without chocolate. It's just one of those things that we would call the staff of life. Well, I have a marvelous recipe here for chocolate chip tartlets. Now, these are something that are so easy to make, and they're perfect because they're not a real large serving. So if you're going to be having any holiday dinners that are really going to be rich, 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 rich with an abundance of food, something like this is just perfect because it's small. It is going to be just perfect with coffee or tea. Your guests will love it. Now, this will make up 6 of the tarts. And, of course, you're going to need to have your tart forms because you're going to need to put a crust in there. So you'll need 6 of those. Now, this is the recipe. It's really easy. The ingredients are 1.5 cups of toasted hazelnuts, 1.5 cups of toasted hazelnuts, 1¾ cups of all-purpose flour, and then you need 1 tablespoon of confectionery sugar, 1/3 cup of soft margarine, and then you're going to have your filling. It is 2 tablespoons of cornstarch, 1 tablespoon of unsweetened cocoa, 1 tablespoon of superfine sugar, 1¼ cups of low-fat milk. You're going to need 3 tablespoons of chocolate and hazelnut spread, and you get that at the market, 2½ tablespoons each of dark chocolate chips, milk chocolate chips, and white chocolate chips. Ew, for chocolate, that's the way it's going to go. All right, this is how you do it. First step, you finally chop your nuts in a food processor. You're going to add the flour, sugar, and margarine. Process it all for a few seconds until it looks like breadcrumbs. You want to add about 2, maybe 3 tablespoons of water, and then it's going to form a soft dough. And you want to chill it in your freezer after you get that out of your Cuisinart or whatever your food processor is. Chill it in the freezer, wrap it in wax paper or saran wrap for about 10 minutes. Then after that 10 minutes is up, roll out the dough and use it to line 6 4-inch tartlet pans. You want to prick the bases with a fork and line them with some crumpled foil, loosely crumpled foil. You bake them at 450 degrees for 15 minutes, and then you want to remove and discard the foil and bake for a further 5 minutes until the pie shells are nice and crisp and just golden, slightly browned. And then you want to just take them out of the oven and set them aside, and they're just going to cool. Now the filling. This is where it really gets to be fun. Mix together the cornstarch, the unsweetened cocoa, and the sugar with enough milk where you have a smooth paste. You don't want it watery, but you want a smooth paste. You want to stir in the remaining milk, pour into a pan, and cook gently over low heat, stirring until it's nice and thick and smooth. Then you stir in your chocolate and your hazelnut spread. Now your chips, in a separate bowl, you put all of those together, and you take out about 1/4 of the chips, and you put them to the side. Stir 1/2 of your remaining chips into the custard. You want to cover it with damp wax paper. Leave it alone until it's almost cold, and then stir in the 2/2 of the chocolate chips. And after that, spoon your mixture into your pie shells and set aside to cool, and then decorate with the reserved chips, scattering them over the top. Or you can decorate with something else, whatever you want. But what happens when you put in that first batch of chips, it enables them to slightly melt, so you're going to have a mixture of textures with this tart. Calories? Oh, we don't have calories with anything we share on the air. It doesn't exist on the Donna Sebo Show. Just good flavor. We're out of time. Have a fabulous weekend. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back with you on Monday. Have a fabulous day, wonderful weekend, and you are just going to have gifts of life given to you you've never imagined possible. Donna Sebo here. Talk with you on Monday. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.